You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where, of course, we talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News, and today we're jumping right into a Raptors preview with Locked On Raptors host Sean Woodley. But first, I want to rock through a little news dump from Pacerland today. One is a big deal. One is kind of a big deal. Actually, it's a pretty small deal. But let's do the small deal one first. The Skills Challenge at All-Star Weekend will feature a Pacer, Domantas Sabonis, not just playing in the All-Star game. He will also be participating in the Taco Bell Skills Challenge. I think that name is hilariously silly. The way it works is it's like a tournament of big men versus guards, and then there's a big man guard pairing in the finals. So Sabonis, Siakam, Bam, and I think Chris Middleton will be in the big man group, although it's kind of weird that Middleton's a big. It's either him or Tatum, which either one is kind of odd. But, yeah, it's cool for Sabonis and cool for the Pacers that they don't just have a guy in the All-Star game. They actually have something going on All-Star weekend that they can look forward to. But on the less cool news front from All-Star weekend, three-point contest participants released. No Doug McDermott. The field does feature some really good shooters. Devontae Graham, Davis Bertans, Buddy Hield, Zach LaVine, on that one. Trae Young, Duncan Robinson, Damian Lillard, and Joe Harris. So outside LaVine, that's a stud shooter group. And it seems like they really value guys who make a lot of threes, like take a ton, make a lot, and McDermott takes like a medium amount. So I think that hurt him. And then LaVine is in, I think, because they had to have a Bulls player doing something for All-Star weekend. And I know LaVine should be in the dunk, but they had four dunk guys. This is just a guess, but they had four dunk guys. So they just said, yeah, shoot some threes. And he actually is shooting 40% from three on a ton of volume this year. So it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, I just don't think of Zach LaVine as a shooter. But to be fair, to his credit, he is shooting very well from three this year. So there's our smaller news. McDermott, you could call it snubbed. I'll call it snubbed just for fun. McDermott snubbed from the old three-point contest, but Sabonis going to show off his skills, some passing, some running and dribbling in the skills challenge. So looking forward to that. The big news, the finally big news from J. Michael of the Indy Star, the Pacers are looking to move a little used forward T.J. Leaf at the trade deadline, which me and Adam talked about on our trade deadline preview last week. That makes a ton of sense, especially if they can either do one of two things. Get a non-guaranteed deal that they can cut would be one of those options, and then they'd have a roster spot instead of Leaf. To do that, they would probably have to attach a small asset to him because a team would be taking on 2 years of TJ Leaf's deal. Or the alternative option, which probably wouldn't require attaching him to an asset, is getting a fully guaranteed deal for the rest of this year at a potential position of need. So also in that article, two things that I would like to point out, all reporting from J. Michael. He did a terrific job on this and does a great job covering the team. One, this is all in quotes. Quote, they are seeking to help Leaf find a team that will give him minutes to develop. What the Pacers get in return for Leaf, if anything, will be minimal and isn't the priority. So two things there. One, I think that's fun phrasing to say give him minutes to develop, but like he's a young player, right? He wants to play, and a team that is young and rebuilding might be more serviceable to him than the Pacers, who now have him behind Jakar Sampson in the rotation. And if that Suns game is any solace where he didn't play in garbage time and Alize did, he's behind Alize Johnson in the rotation. So that makes a lot of sense, but the key part there at the end says the return will be minimal and isn't the priority. That suggests to me, I mean, this could just, I'm using conjecture off a report from someone else, right? This is totally just trying to put some nuance to what someone else said. But to me, that signals they don't care what it is. They're just going to cut it for a roster spot and then get what they want, whether that be someone who's currently a free agent or someone who will be a free agent via the buyout market, though it's unclear really at this time who's going to be buyout candidates this season. So we'll see. But I think personally, like someone better than Goga would be the move, right? Like a post-ish player who can soak up 5 minutes if you need it in the playoffs and not get you killed in the way Goga has a few times this season. Although he's had some nice highs and has looked okay for a rookie, he's had some terrible lows that you can't accept when the games matter. So that's what I would do. But also in this article, another addression is says, quote, the Pacers would like a true four who can play in space. So basically what they thought the theory of Leaf would be. So like the guy who might comes to my head is like Nemanja Bjelica, although he maybe can't play enough in space, but he's a pretty good shooter. But he obviously has way more value than Leaf, will not be bought out anything like that. Excuse me for that burp. So he's not attainable. I'm just thinking like that mold, if it's possible. I'm not really sure if there's any free agents or buyout guys of that mold, but if there is one, I will be sure to include it. But Leaf on the trade block, big news from the day. We'll see what that means. But I do think that means they're trying to – I interpret this all to mean they're trying to free up a roster spot that they can use to really finalize what they consider their playoff team, which is, you know, their rotation plus Aaron Holiday if they need it, and this big man who can come in if they need it. So that's what I think of the news that's happening. So Leaf on the chopping block, and two guys coming in hot. Well, one guy coming in hot for two events at All-Star Weekend, and then McDermott snubbed. But they got the Raptors. The Pacers play the Raptors twice in the next 3 days. So I think it's more fun to talk about basketball. Let's talk about the Toronto Raptors. Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors coming in hot. Let's do it. Locked On crossover action coming at you this Wednesday. Locked On Pacers, Locked On Raptors coming in. As always, I am one of the hosts of Locked On Pacers, Tony East. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. Joining me on the line, the lovely host of Locked On Raptors, who wrote a book about the current NBA champion Raptors and writes for a variety of places about Toronto's team, Sean Woodley. Sean, how you doing, man?
I am doing great, Tony. Looking forward to the Raptors playing a team that doesn't suck for the first time in like 3 weeks. It's been a nice 11-game win streak, don't get me wrong, but I'm excited to learn something as opposed to just realizing and understanding that, most of the league sucks. So this should be fun.
Before we get into the Raptors 11-game win streak, Sean, I think we have to remind everyone that this podcast is sponsored by Taco Bell, because Siakam and Sabonis going head-to-head in the Taco Bell Skills Challenge, officially announced a couple hours ago.
That's true. I like that Sabonis is in it. I think Bam's in it too, which I
think it's cool. A fun big man group for once.
Yeah, honestly, like the lineup for the Skills Challenge, minus Derrick Rose, who, you know, can go kick rocks, minus Derrick Rose, is really, really good and fun. And the three-point lineup is like kind of a bummer to me. So I'm also someone who thinks the 3-point contest is terribly overrated. I think it's like,
I do too. I agree.
Basically the home run derby, which sucks. In theory, it's fun, but it takes forever. It's repetitive and not super fun. So I am a skills challenge guy. I know like the format is weird and kind of silly, and the fact that you can just like whip three passes in quick succession and then just move on, even if you miss, is silly, but I think there's something there. There's bones of a cool contest that is way more entertaining, especially since they brought in big men, which is always fun.
The 3-point contest would be cool, but they decided not to invite second best percentage in the league, Doug McDermott. So I don't.
Or Matt Thomas, the guy who's only in the league because he can shoot.
Yes, All-Star Weekend is fun and silly, but not silly is winning 11 games in a row. And you buried that lead for me, but we're still going to talk about it. So I only know that they've won 11 in a row because I was checking out the Raptors this morning for some prep for tomorrow. But I think the best team they beat in is Philly in that. And then the second best is what, the Spurs, right? So it's not like a murderer's row of opponents.
Yeah, they beat the Thunder in there too. They looked really good in their Thunder win. It was the first game of the streak when Marc Gasol made his return, and they just looked awesome on offense.
So is it as impressive as 11 game sounds, or is it just they're kind of playing pretty well against not good teams?
I mean, obviously no one's ever as good as they are when they've won 11 games in a row, probably. But I think the defense has been real, and it's held up over the last 11 games. They're number two in defensive rating and the number two in defensive rating in the league. So that seems to kind of check out. And the offense has been, it's like 0.2 points per 100 possessions away from being number one over the last 11 games. There's three teams tied at 118.3. So the Raptors are actually fourth right now over the last 11 games. But they've really picked it up on offense. And having Marc Gasol back, although he's missed the last couple games and is going to be out until after the All-Star break, so he's going to miss both of these matchups with that hamstring injury he's been dealing with. They just, with Gasol back and with everyone sort of back in the lineup, Pascal Siakam finding some more efficiency and getting back in the groove, they've been just deadly on offense. Their transition game is, as always, very, very good. They have a lot of very good three-point shooters who are knocking down a lot of shots right now. And it's just a really efficient, well-oiled machine. There's lots of, you know, when you watch the Raptors, it's really enjoyable. I think Zach Lowe even went on a diatribe about this. I guess whatever a positive diatribe is on his podcast, talking about just there's constant cutting and movement and screening and passing and, you know, beautiful possessions one after another. that's kind of the deal, and that's really what they've kind of hit over this 11 games. And yes, it's come against some very, very porous defenses, but at the same time, you can only play who's in front of you, and they've been really good against bad teams all season long. And the thing about the league this year is that there's like 18 bad teams, so everyone's playing a lot of bad teams, you know, night in and night out. And so I don't know if the Raptors are any different in the fact that their schedule's been easy. I think a lot of teams kind of have these stretches of the schedule where it's like, oh, I have most of the East on my schedule coming up, and most of the East is bad. So by proxy, the schedule is not exactly difficult. And they still were very good early in the season against a very tough schedule as well. So I think they're pretty legit, man. Like their net rating over the course of the year is like a plus 6.7. They're top four, I think, in net rating. Their defense, like I said, is number two. There's lots of things that suggest to me that this is at the very least an excellent regular season team, and we'll see how the offense translates in the playoffs. But the defense, I think, is going to give them a floor in the postseason, no matter what.
I'm glad they're winning a lot for one reason, because a lot of the Pacers fandom conglomerate, whatever you want to say, has said all season long, you know, oh, we're going to catch the Raptors in the standings. I say, why? The Raptors are very good. Oh, they're going to sell their veterans. Why? They're second in the East.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
It never made sense to me either, man. Like, I was all season long, I've been calling this the Hakuna Matata season.
Because
there should be,
title. Who cares what happens this year?
Exactly. Like, it's just like, okay, let's watch the olds defend their title nobly. Let's get another run for Pascal Siakam in the playoffs as a number one option. And then just like recalculate in the summer. And the other thing too, and a friend of mine on the Raptors beat, Blake Murphy, has brought this up quite a bit lately. Bird rights are actually going to be pretty handy this summer, considering there's not much cap space around. So you could probably, in theory, keep your expiring guys on board and then potentially flip them in sign-in trades if you're not going to keep them around yourselves in the offseason. And really the only guys that have expiring now, I think Fred VanVleet, like, they're probably going to re-sign him at some point. It seems like that's on track to happen. And then there's Marcus Gasol and Serge Ibaka. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys is back. And then if some team really wants Serge Ibaka or Marcus Gasol as like a piece to their championship puzzle, the Raptors can probably fetch an asset for them, because I don't think either of those guys are going to go sign with one of the five terrible teams that are sitting there with cap space
with
this
cap
summer.
Room,
so.
Right.
Yeah, it's been very, very nice. It kind of seems, too, like the Pacers have been going through a bit of this, too, am I right? Like, I know now that Oladipo's back, things have gotten a little bit more serious, but this always felt like a bit of a mulligan year, right? Because of the lack of Oladipo, because really it seems like next year when Oladipo, you would figure, is back to full health, is sort of the one where they'd really go for it. Have you kind of felt that as well, that it's been a pretty easygoing year?
It was until Vic came back. I've hated the vibe recently with everything. Not around the team. The players are fine. They understand. But like, people who follow the team are like, oh my God, they've lost two games in a row and Vic looks terrible. I'm like, guys, he's played three games in 390 days. Like, what are we doing? And it's just weird because before he was back, like, they were already, they beat Toronto. I mean, Pascal and Mark and Norm didn't play. So it's not like the thing, but they won. Like, they're good. They've beaten very good teams along the way. They were good without Vic, and there were no expectations because they didn't have Vic. And now they have him, and then they go 1-2 in their first day. It's not even, like, catastrophic, and it's, like, the worst thing ever. But it was really fun before that. But I think people are starting to realize that, okay, this might take some time for this guy who's been out for a year to be good. And now it will be fun again. It'll just take a few more games to get there. But yeah, there's no expectations, and they're clearly, like, if Vic gets up to speed at all, going to be better than their seed come playoff time, right? Because they didn't have him for 47 games, so that's when it will be really fun, is if they can peak and get the right opponent in the first round. I don't know who that is, and if you get the two seed, it will not be the Raptors, but we'll see.
So with Vic, like, I know it hasn't looked great early on, like you said, and that's to be expected, and the team's been very good even without him so far. And like, Domantas Sabonis is an all-star. He's been fantastic. He's super fun to watch. He's kind of like Bam North a little bit in the way that he kind of runs like the offense from the elbows.
No,
and
no,
stuff
no.
Like
Bam
that.
Is Sabonis South.
Fair enough. Fair. They're both proto Gasol. So
yes.
It's
fair. Fair.
Yeah. Like, I like all of those guys. And I think that might be sort of the way forward for centers, right? Is like dudes who can kind of create and initiate offense a little bit. And maybe they're a little bit more stationary and, you know, bound to the paint, but the way they sort of can orchestrate your offense is a nice thing, and it allows for spacing and all that nice stuff that we love in 2020. And so, like, I'm curious, what sort of percentage of last year Oladipo do you think they need if they want to, say, win a round of the playoffs? Or can they win it even if Oladipo is kind of a shell of himself?
They're clearly, the guys around him are exponentially better than last year. I mean, they were 2 years ago, they did not win a single game without him. And then last year, I think they were a little under 500 and then whatever, 30 and 16 without him this year. And they still had a ton of injuries along the way in the first 47. So they're clearly better without him. So I think it's just going to be about for him, like if he can just be a play finisher even come playoff time, which he's not that yet. Like he's shooting 20%. That's not a typo. It's been brutal. But if he can just be a play finisher, like an amazing second or third option come playoff time, yeah, they'll clearly be better than last year and be dangerous. So far, that's not there. But, I mean, it's almost impossible for me to think he doesn't get there just because you've seen so many, like, he's reading the pick and roll well. He looks fast already. Like, all this stuff that just suggests, like, yeah, you know what? He hasn't played a game in freaking forever, and he'll figure all out all that stuff. He just has to keep playing.
Totally. Like, have things changed the way they play?
Yes.
For the worse? Like,
Is it as fun?
Yeah. Like, how have things changed?
Well, so it's kind of weird because he's on a minutes restriction, which is fine. And he's coming off the bench, which is also fine because their starting lineup's been really good. But in tandem, those things kind of make this weird thing where, so he plays the last 6 minutes of every quarter. And that's not going to happen against the Raptors, actually. They're ramping that up to 28 minutes, and they might start him for the first time in Toronto. But the first three games, that's what they did, is the last 6 minutes of every quarter. So he plays with the second unit more than the first unit, which is not the unit he'll be playing with when he's all the way up to speed. And it breaks up their bench, which has been like the best thing about them this year. So they've been outscored by 19 with him on the floor in the three games, and they've lost in regulation by 16 points over the three games. Like, you do the math. So it's just disrupted the rotation a ton. So I wonder how much of the 28 minutes and the possibly starting thing is them being like, oh shit, we should probably change this plan a little bit and get the right lineups that are going to work out there. Because the other shift is Jeremy Lamb, who's been starting, will move to the bench when Vic is starting and all that. And Lamb in the bench has been like ridiculous on offense so far. I mean, they've made an ungodly percentage of threes, which won't keep up, but it looks really good because they have all these, you know, McConnell, Sabonis, and McDermott just whipping the ball around and hitting these threes. And Lamb's like, oh yeah, I'm the fourth option and I can score from everywhere. Like the Raptors know, right? He's hit two half court shots against them or something stupid. So
I repressed that. I didn't know that happened.
Sorry. So I think when they get up to more normalcy, that will be better. And I think the earlier they shift him to the starting lineup is better at this point, just because we're calling it an adjustment period now and he's struggling. Like, why would they change it again and have us have another adjustment period? So that shift will help, I think, A, with more fun, and B, establishing more normalcy as things go forward.
Another question I have for you about just like what we can expect matchup-wise is, so Turner and Sabonis have started together, and
yes,
I think that's, you know, that kind of runs a little bit counter to what
no one ever asks me about this.
I'm very excited to talk to you about. Oh, is that? Were you just kidding?
I was kidding. That's everybody's basic question.
Sorry, whatever.
No, you're fine.
You're getting
important information.
And they kind of do it like they run a little counter to what the Raptors do, right? Where they kind of have the similar skill sets between Gasol and Ibaka is the backup center, comes off the bench. And Siakam, I guess, opens up that up for them because of what he does. And that's sort of my intrigue here with this matchup, where, you know, Siakam missed the first matchup. How have Turner and Sabonis done when they've been forced to guard in space? Like, is that, like, neither of them really sort of profile as like typical guys who can go chase people out to the perimeter. And, you know, based on the success the Pacers have had this season and the fact that they've stuck with it for more than half the year, it seems as though maybe they're actually having more success on defense than it would, you know, kind of logically, what maybe logic would have said before the season that they would have had.
Right now they're at 106.5 defensive rating with those two out there, which is good. And you're absolutely right. Those are what you'd consider the weaknesses. And you can stretch that further and pin it on Sabonis' weakness, because they're just going to put Turner on the guy around the basket every time, right? His ability to handle pick and rolls by himself and come from the weak side is, you know, top five in the league. So Sabonis has to defend in space more. And Sabonis is quick, deceptively quick. And he, you know, I think everyone who watches their team a lot will say that about their guy's weakness. But, you know, he's okay in space. But, you know, obviously it's a weakness. Like, anyone can watch him and notice he's not fast. So it just depends who his matchup is. And, like, the Raptors are a team that it actually works pretty well against, right? Because I mean, they do go small, but they're not like blazing fast at the four or anything like that, which helps them a lot. But
Siakam is like insanely fast. What are you talking about?
Siakam is pretty fast, right? But he's not this. Okay,
that's like his thing.
No, he's not. I don't know. It's not like I know I'm an idiot, but it doesn't seem like it's like straight at the basket speed, right? He's like a spinny kind of get around the dudes fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's not going to just blow right past them. It's like Bojan last year could guard DeMar because DeMar was a lot of side-to-sidey stuff. But as soon as DeMar went straight at the basket, Bojan was like, what just happened? I just got beat.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing. So, yes, Siakam is fast. Well, let's edit that part out. We're not going
to
do that.
I'm sorry to call you out. No, we're not.
No, that's okay.
That
I deserve
at least
it.
I'm not editing it into this. The rap.
I'm not editing
podcast.
It out.
I'm going to get all the people mad at you, and then they will – cheer for me as I come to Siakam's rescue.
Is he even good? I'm just kidding. Yeah, well,
no, he's garbage.
We can stop talking about the Pacers now and shift to Siakam because he didn't play the first time these guys played, and it took an Aaron Holiday miracle game for the Pacers to even win that game in overtime. So obviously the Raptors are much better than the team the Pacers saw in December because Siakam is amazing this year. And obviously I am an idiot for not realizing he is amazingly fast, but I do catch my fair share of Raptors games, don't worry. But he's, you know, it's just crazy to watch him spin around everything in his way, and he can pass, and he's a good off-the-dribble shooter now and all this stuff. But describe what has made Siakam work so well as the first option, because that's what's taken him from really good going to be a star to, okay, he did it, he's a star, because now he's doing this with the ball all the time.
It really has just been like a truly startling change in his shot profile in terms of difficulty and him somehow being able to maintain some semblance of efficiency while doing that. Like last year, he was very much opportunistic, right? Like he would, you know, cut from the corner and take advantage when Kawhi Leonard saw a couple bodies that
would
be found on that guy.
Kawhi.
The fun guy. he would sort of leverage all the attention sent towards Kawhi into space that he could then exploit, and then he would, you know, get found by passes and stuff like that, and he would destroy teams. And he was a really, really good corner 3-point shooter last season. I think he shot like 44% or something like that from the corners. And this season he's like basically cut out corner threes entirely and is not cutting at all, and he just kind of has the ball a lot, and he's been just able to pull up from three all over the place above the arc. You know, he's been catch and shoot above the arc as well. Like, it's just been a complete change where his shots have come from. He still gets to the rim a ton, obviously, and he still drives quite a bit. But the thing about his drives this year is it's not against the compromised defense that's overcompensating to stop Kawhi. It's a defense that's loaded up on him, and still he manages to, you know, plow through guys, spin them into oblivion. And he's been really, really, really good from the post too. He's just got a really good sense of like when double teams are coming, how to sort of exploit the baseline and you know, get that little pocket of space and take advantage of it to get to the basket with those little drop steps. And, you know, he'll like yo-yo the ball away from guys when doubles come and find shooters with really nice passes out of the post. And like all of that stuff is like top option. A top option repertoire that he just like found over the summer somehow, despite never really having that rollout outside of a few games last season when Kawhi sat. And even then, a lot of that was Kyle running the offense more than it was Pascal Siakam. And he just like over the summer was like, okay, I'm going to practice all these shots that I'm going to have to use as the number one option. And he's good at them. And it's like absurd that he's been so good. And, you know, the efficiency has dropped off quite a bit. Like last year, I think he had like a 63 true shooting. I think he's down to about 56 right now. And, you know, there have been some growing pains here and there. And he'll sometimes put up wobbly lines, you know, like a 7 of 22 from time to time, just because he kind of, you know, gets a little overzealous at times and tries to force things. But for the most part, like with the 3-point shooting, he's, and I think recently a bit of an increased ability to get to the line too, which was a big problem early on. He's really kind of started to climb back up in terms of true shooting and stuff like that. And that really is what it is. Like the shot chart for him is 100% different than it was last year. And the way he's getting his shots is completely different. They have him running pick and roll in crunch time now, and it's actually worked. Wow. I think you may have seen he hit a game-winning pull-up three against the Knicks a couple weeks back, you know, working a pick and roll with Fred VanVleet as a screener. And that's just something they'll bust out. And they really, I think, kind of handed over the reins to him in crunch time lately too because of all the work he's put in to, you know, sort of prove that he's able to create offense for the team and keep the offense flowing. And, you know, when they don't trust him to have the ball in his hands, they just have him as the screener with Kyle Lowry. And it's a bucket every single time for one of the two. And it's just been, it's been a lot of fun, man. It's been very unexpected. I was expecting a lot of growing pains with Pascal this year. I thought the defense was going to have to carry the offense pretty significantly. I thought the offense was going to be somewhere around, like, you know, 15 to 20 in the league at best. They're number 13 right now, but they're not far off from, you know, the top 10. Like I said, they've been amazing lately. And it's all because Pascal is just, you know, taken on this number one, like, option workload and shot chart and made it work somehow. I don't really know how, but it's happened and it's pretty damn cool.
Yeah, we look at every team the Pacers are going to play during the week in our first episode of the week. All right, we get to the Raptors, and I'm looking at Siakam. And his usage is up 10% from last year.
Yeah.
It's like, that is crazy for a volume increase. So, like, naturally, his true shooting inefficiency is going to go down a little bit. But to still be able to get to the rim when he wants and have this versatile three that, you know, he's hitting about the same percent as last year on twice the volume, it's like, my goodness, what a player. Like, it's just ridiculous how much better he's gotten.
I'm really excited for the Sabonis matchup just to sort of see how that works, because he's had some issues with certain bigs in the past. Bam has given him a lot of trouble. Jonathan Isaac is typically someone who will give him issues. I'm curious where Sabonis comes in there, because I will say, typically white Euros are Siakam's lunch, but I think Sabonis is a little bit differently built and a little bit more sound and probably a little smarter defensively and doesn't like – crowd up on Siakam and just wait to get spun into the black hole. And so I'm fascinated to watch that matchup. And I'm curious to see if maybe switch things up and throw Turner on him too, just to see if maybe that length can bother him. Because length, you know, as I mentioned, with like an Isaac or a Bam, has given Siakam trouble at times as well. So I think there probably should be multiple looks to see, you know, how it works. And I think we might see Pascal kind of try to take advantage of, as we talked about, the weakness in guarding in space for both Sabonis and Turner. I wonder if maybe this is a game where they turn it over to Siakam a lot to run pick and roll and try to, you know, draw the bigs out and see if he can, you know, rain hell from above the arc on threes in a Pacers matchup as sort of like a way to work around that really big front court.
They did well against Sabonis the first time these guys played, but they did not do well against Turner. And some of that was no Gasol, no Siakam, right? You're relying on OG or McCaw or whoever to get one of those guys every time down the floor. And that, you know, Turner's going to kill tiny people. I know he's not an awesome post player, but he's a 7-foot tall person. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to Siakam just restoring some normalcy to that matchup, because that was kind of odd just the way that cross match went down last time. But man, I want Gasol to play. I just really like Marc Gasol. I said a nice thing about Marc Gasol in the Fieldhouse group chat the other day. I said, we were talking about the Raptors defending the Bucks last year in the playoffs, and I said, yeah, they did really well because they had the best defender in basketball and Kawhi Leonard, and it was my
Kawhi Leonard was like the fourth best defensive player on last year's Raptors, man. Like,
yeah, they're insane.
He was great, obviously, and against Giannis, it was indispensable in the conference finals, but like, Lowry's a genius. Fred VanVleet is like the most annoying on-ball defender this side of Patrick Beverley. And, you know, even Siakam last season, I think, was a little bit better than he has been this year as sort of like a free safety. And I will say Siakam's defense in the last 5 or 6 games has been monstrous, and he's been all over the place. And so I'm curious to see how that plays out when he probably draws the Sabonis or the Turner responsibilities. And so, yeah, it should be a fun one, man. I like these two teams. They're both fun. They both sort of overshoot the expectations all the time. And that endears itself, obviously, to my heart a little bit. And so I'm looking forward to this one. And hopefully, I mean, you know, for Raptors fans, you hope that Victor Oladipo doesn't bomb away and return to full Victor Oladipo status in this game. But also, that'd be cool to see that happen, because Victor Oladipo rules.
One of these games, he's going to have his progression to the mean, right, where he remembers everything about playing in a game and isn't afraid of contact at the rim and just probably like 10 for 14 or something. It's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
So it'll be VanVleet on him, I'm guessing, right, if that's how this game starts? That's a good matchup for him.
Yeah, maybe. Raptors OG. It might be OG, honestly, because there's no TJ Warren, right? Is he still out?
Yes, TJ Warren will not be playing with a concussion. Last game, I started Aaron Holiday in his stead, but if they're considering shifting Vic to the starting lineup. I'm going to assume that if they're saying that they're considering it, they're going to do it. That could be wrong.
Yeah, so I think it'd probably be like OG on Oladipo. I mean, I guess they'll see how Oladipo's like legs are and stuff. If he doesn't profile as like a terribly dangerous threat because he's still working his way back in, right, maybe they can throw Lowry on him or whatever. But, you know, I would say,
oh no,
underestimate Lowry or Fred's ability to defend a larger person at your peril, because they've been absurd. And, you know, on the perimeter is a bit of a different story, but I think Lowry has like the best stats defending post-ups in the entire league. he's just like a monster. He's got
that booty, man.
But yeah, it is the booty that anchors him down and just keeps him in place. And like, they're just really, really pesky. The fact that I was not sold on them being able to play them together in the starting five this season, because they're both 6 feet tall, if that, and they have made it work, and they're just so annoying. And Nick Nurse, man, he will try weird things. I would imagine. Yeah, like he's been ridiculous. Nate McMillan is number two, by the way. He should have been number two last year, too. He's amazing. I think Nate McMillan is deeply, deeply underappreciated. Look at this very nice podcast between two people.
We're doing good things. It's because we have a Canadian on here, right?
This is so different than when I do a Celtics podcast with John, and I'm just screaming about him about how I hate the Celtics.
Oh, when I do the next Heat show, when I have to talk about Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren, there will be no niceties.
But yeah, it should be fun. I think the defensive matchups in this one are interesting. I think they could be pretty fluid, and Nick Nurse might come up with some weird stuff to try to exploit the bigs, and you know, it'll be a good time. I think I'm glad we get both games back to back too. It's like a mini series to try to get a real feel of what the matchup looks like.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch the second most famous person from Rockford, Illinois, Fred VanVleet.
Who's the most famous person?
Sean, you were talking to him right now. I didn't know he was from Rockford until the conference finals. They were talking about his son, and like there was a profile on Fred. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's an NBA player from Rockford? That's crazy.
Oh man, if you watch the Raptors every game, it's impossible to not know that he's from Rockford because they talk about it a lot.
Yeah, it's very clear now. The Wizards always talk about Victor Oladipo. I went to high school in D.C., and I think they talk about him like all the time. They bring up the
right.
It's just one of those things. Okay, so I have one more question for you about these series. Well, actually, kind of two more, but the second one's kind of a jokey one. All right, what matchup scares you the most from a Raptors perspective? Like, who in the don't like jokingly say Jeremy Lamb? Like, what matchup do you think if the Pacers win one or both of these games, how are they able to kill the Raptors and get points?
So this is interesting because I was looking at the numbers just now and I was a little surprised that the Pacers aren't a better offensive rebounding team considering they play
bad.
Two bigs.
Actually, bad.
Yeah, and that has been where the Raptors lose most of their games. Their like first possession defense is so good that sometimes they'll give up a million offensive rebounds and it doesn't matter, because even if they give up second chance points, they're still ridiculous defensively. But I was expecting to see the Pacers near the top, but they're number 27 in offensive rebounding rate. And if they're not crashing the offensive glass, that seems like a bit of a missed opportunity, because Serge Ibaka is not an awesome rebounder. That Ibaka Siakam front court has kind of gotten bludgeoned by teams on the offensive glass. And so it's not even like an individual player matchup. It's just like the glass, which, you know, has been an issue for the Raptors. And, you know, it might run counter to, you know, if you see a team near the bottom in the offensive rebounding category, it kind of suggests sometimes that they kind of forego that anyway and just try to get back on defense, which is fine. But I wonder if they'll sort of change things up knowing that the Raptors are not so awesome when it comes to stopping that. They're number 26 in defensive rebounding rate. And again, most of their losses have been due to giving up just huge gulps in shot attempts. There have been a couple of games where they've lost by like 4 or 5 points, but have given up like 15 to 20 more shots than the other team. And that has been the difference. So curious to see. That'll be a fun little thing to watch with the possession battle. What about you, sir? Do you have a matchup you're interested in?
Well, I want to hit on the rebounding before I get into that. But Pacers just got out rebounded by 22 by the Knicks a few minutes ago. That was embarrassing. So their problematic rebounding thing, Sabonis is awesome at it. And a lot of his are his own misses, so it's like misleading, but he's still clearly strong and good at grabbing the ball. They get screwed up a lot where they really try to crash the defensive glass, right? So they kind of scoot in on shots. But with the league shifting to these threes, there's a lot of long rebounds, and they just get smoked on those, right? Like they just fly off the rim, and the Pacers lose it over and over and over. So if the Raptors take a lot of threes, even if they're missing them, they'll have a lot of good chances for those offensive rebounds. And that's where they can make up that gap that they normally don't have. To me, looking at the lovely Toronto Raptors, the guard play is what instills the most fear in me matchup-wise. As good as Brogdon and Vic have been, Vic is shaking off the rust, and Brogdon struggled with some shiftier guards this year, and Lowry and Fred are both pretty shifty. You know,
plus there's the PTSD from the conference finals last year as well.
Except Brogdon played okay in that series, didn't he?
He was their second best player.
Yeah, I was going to say, close. He was okay against
Raptors. He almost overcame Eric Bledsoe being an absolute pumpkin, which is not easy to do.
Pumpkin. I like that. But so against the Mavs countless times a few nights ago, right, he would get beat. So they'd have to tag the roller from the weak side, and the Mavs would just whip it to the corner for an open three. So if Lowry and Fred or whoever Brogdon happens to be guarding are able to get past him, which hasn't been particularly hard recently, surprisingly, they should be able to generate some good looks from the high-efficiency spot before. So he's going to have to lock down a little better, and Turner behind him is going to have to do a good job keeping the roll in front so they don't have to squeeze in as much.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I
forgot what my silly question was. Crap.
Oh, come on, dude.
That's not good. I know that's not a good question. That's never a good thing to forget. I can't remember.
Was it something about the Raptor? Was it something about...
It might have been the Rockford thing, honestly.
Was it about Doug McDermott always destroying the Raptors dating back to his Bulls days? Oh, yeah. There was a streak of the Bulls beating the Raptors 11 games in a row over like 3 or 4 years. And Doug McDermott, I think, had like 4 or 5 20-point games in that stretch. So there's always a bit of built-in
fear. Oh, it was a story. I remember now. I did not know that Doug was so killer against the Raptors.
I mean, there were like a bunch of guys in those Bulls teams that like were inexplicably awesome against the Raptors. Like Etuan Moore had some monster games. Aaron Brooks
had a couple.
That's an
Indiana legend. He went to Purdue, man. You'd be a little Etuan here.
No, I would never do that. He had like a 30-point game last year too for the Pelicans here too, so... No, I have a healthy respect for each one and all former Bulls.
I remember now after they so if you'll remember then when they won in overtime in Indiana, they had a chance near the end of regulation to win it and they did not. But I saw Jeremy Lamb in the locker room after that game and I was like, Jeremy, do you think you're going to hit another half court shot? And he's like, honestly, dude, I was convinced in my head, like the whole possession, I was going to somehow get the ball and hit another buzzer against the Raptors. So just so Raptors people know, Jeremy Lamb, is convinced he's going to hit another buzzer beater against them.
The nice thing about being a Raptors fan now is that no buzzer beater can possibly hurt us because we were there for the one.
You got all the karma out in one.
Yeah, like just the only buzzer beater that ever needs to exist or engender any sort of feelings in us has already happened, and we're good with it.
So. I watch a lot of basketball, and I still, since that shot, have not seen one bounce like that.
No, it doesn't happen.
Crazy.
I want to say in like the first Raptors game of the season, there was a very similar shot by like the opposing team. And I think the announcer was like, oh, that's karma or something like that. Like, yeah, not quite equal, but sure.
I think it was John Collins just had the half court shot that went over the back of the backboard and still rolled back in. It didn't count, but I think that's as close as I've seen. That's crazy. Yeah. That has to be such a fun viewing experience, knowing that your team is good. Probably not a title team, but it doesn't matter because you just won a championship. Like, I think that's probably the peak viewing experience for a fan.
Yeah, now if the stupid Knicks would hire like an agent to be their president and stay away from Masai, I'd be just thrilled.
I saw the jokes about him. What would he trade for himself? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah. I don't want to. I did a little thing off the top of the Raptors show that you're listening to. If you're a Raptors fan and you're listening to Locked On Raptors right now, so I don't need to go too far into it. But get your hands off, you creepy stalker, James Dolan.
Tell me how you really feel, man. So again, sponsored by Taco Bell here. Check out the Skills Challenge to see the real Raptors versus Pacers. But these two games should be fun. These home and homes are fun. The Pacers had one against the Timberwolves, and I think the Timberwolves said something. The Timberwolves coach Ryan Saunders said something about how it's a little easier to prep when you have it's more like a playoff series, like the Timberwolves would know, haha. But still, it's a little easier to prep when you got two games in a row against the same team. So should be a little more intricate on the X's and O's and all the fun.
You also may be privy to Raptors history. If the Raptors win, they will set a franchise record for their 12th straight win, and that would be nice. They've fallen short the last two times they got to 11. So.
And some potential tiebreaker implications, though it's unlikely the Pacers catch the Raptors in the standings.
Yeah, that would require the Raptors to ever lose again, which they might not.
Well, when they sell off all their veterans, Sean.
When Masai Ujiri sabotages the team from the inside before jumping ship to New York.
Yeah. Yeah. When he trades Kyle Lowry for Dennis Smith and then runs, well,
it's fine. We can laugh. It's not tearing me apart at all.
Sean, so I mentioned when I introduced you, you wrote a book and you have a lot of stuff to promote. So go crazy for a few seconds.
Yeah, We the Champs is the book I wrote. If you are a Pacers fan who wants to read about the Raptors championship run, you can buy that on wherever you get your books, Amazon, all over the place. Go to a bookstore if it's there. Don't buy it on Amazon. You can also find me at Woodley Sean on Twitter and subscribe to this year's podcast, Locked On Raptors and Locked On Pacers and all of our Locked On Podcast Network offerings. And that's about all I got going on. I write for Raptors HQ as well. I'll be at the game tomorrow, so probably hey. Some sort of recapping thing from me there, whether it's tomorrow night or on Wednesday or on Thursday or whatever we're recording this. I don't even know. The chronology is off to me. but in the time after the game takes place, the first of the two games, you will see something from me written at RaptorsHQ.com.
There you go. Go check all that out. From the Raptors perspective, Sean is good, does funny stuff. Still has Terrence Ross, Pacers killer, in his header on Twitter, which is also funny stuff.
He is the only person I care about. He's my friend.
He scored 80 points against the Pacers two seasons ago, and the most he scored against any other team was like 65. It was ridiculous. I did a whole research project on this.
Fun story for you. The desk at which I'm recording this podcast, above it, I have two framed pictures. One is like an art rendition of Kawhi's dunk on Giannis in the conference finals in game 6. And the other is just Terrence Ross dribbling the ball at the court frame that I got for Secret Santa one time. And it's my most prized possession. If there's ever a fire, you know what I'm grabbing first.
The only NBA things I have on my desk are those little owls you can buy on NBA.com. I have a Miami Heat owl. He's wearing a visor with some sunglasses and a Denver Nuggets one. I think he's got some mining gear on and a gold basketball.
Oh, I've also got my Kyle Lowry championship bobblehead, replica championship ring, and a 1995 edition Barbie in a Raptors jersey.
Wow. If you stuck around this long, you are in for a treat of this Locked On crossover. If you're here from the Raptors, you can follow me at T East NBA and Locked On Pacers on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, of course. That's pretty easy. And of course, follow Sean. He does great stuff. And that is all we got, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. If you're here Friday, hopefully the Wednesday game was fun and the trade deadline is over, which is great. If not, enjoy the next 2 days of basketball and don't talk about trades anymore with me. Thank you very much and have a great day.